Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Untangled Resolution's presentation of Sangoma, the Breakup Whisperer. I am your host, Batabilum Tombini, the Breakup Whisperer, and I'm coming to you live from the southern tier of New York State in the United States of America. I am happy to welcome Janelle Lewis to the show. I knew that she would be a perfect guest when she told me her story. Today, we will hear about how her experience with a breakup led her to understand the powerful psychosomatic dynamic, the link between our bodies and our emotions, and to develop self-care practices that help to address the physical damage that tough emotional experiences can create. Do you have a question or comment for us? Dial 929-477-3697 to get into the comment queue. That's 929-477-3697. Our intro music is brought to us by the wonderful people at Purple Planet Music. That's www.purpleplanet.com. The tune you're listening to is called Cool Struttin'. Sit back and listen while everyone gathers. We'll be with you in just a moment. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Breakup Whisperer. This is your host, Batabile Ntombini, and I am very happy to be with you today. I'm excited about my guest today. She told me an amazing story about how she learned about the mind-body connection, about how our emotions can impact our health, and so I'm happy to welcome her to the show. I'm turning on your mic. Janelle?
Hey, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for having me.
Good. I want to start off first by addressing the issue of how to pronounce your name, because I'm not sure I quite got it right in the intro. So please let me know if I got it right or how I'm supposed to say it.
The pronunciation of my name is Janelle. My mom thought she was having a boy, and she was going to name him Neil. Surprise, surprise, I'm not a boy. So the story goes, she looked up and was like, Ja, where's my Neil? Hence, Ja Neil. That's the story I'm sticking to.
Well, it's a fabulous story. I would stick with it. It's a wonderful connection there that your mom made with a spiritual source, right, in giving you your name. There's one other thing that I want to address that also kind of had us both wondering what's going on in the promo photos that go out on social media, like on Facebook and so forth. There's something special about the picture. What did you see?
It was turned to the side and I giggled. I was like, how appropriate is that?
Quite
yummy. I was like, that's pretty accurate.
Well, then I don't have to wonder so much about why that was going on. I could not for the life of me understand it. You sent me a photograph that was properly oriented. I uploaded it. It seemed properly oriented. And then when I went to share it, suddenly it's sideways. I'm like, what is there? You know, who's trying to tell me what?
Exactly. I was like, very appropriate. We'll take it as a sign and roll with it, right?
Yes, we are not talking about conventional today.
No, not at all. So I was like, all right, perfect intro.
So speaking about not talking about conventional, there's lots about your life that hasn't been conventional, and I'm very interested in your foundation story. You know, what is your story? How have you come to become the person you are?
That's a beautiful question. Well, the story could begin before I was born. Before I was born, the story goes that my great-grandmother, who didn't know that my mother was pregnant with me, She had passed away before, you know, she was aware of me being conceived. She came to my grandfather in a dream and asked about me in that dream and said, well, how is Jean and how is her daughter? And so from the spirit realm, my, you know, this, there's been this spiritual connection to my being here from a very early experience. And so I feel like my great grandmother is always looking out for me, and that follows suit. You know, my grandfather was a pastor, so bringing that spiritual connection through follows suit as well. So I guess the John Neal story definitely connects.
Oh, certainly.
But outside of that, I was also raised in this very scientific and a desire and a connection to the science world. Been a science geek since as far back as I can remember. So I've kind of journeyed between the world of spirit and science my entire life. That's been my earliest beingness.
And you're so appropriately bringing that up, because that will be the focus of this show, talking about the science of the body and so forth, and then the connection to spirit, to emotion, you know, to the things that are not necessarily quantifiable from a scientific standpoint, how those things connect to create the beings that we are and to create the experiences that we have. You know, this show is all about creating a healthy breakup culture. So I'm very excited about what you're going to contribute to that conversation. But I want to go back a little bit into your foundation story and into your childhood. I'm curious to know what happened your great-grandmother dropped this gem of information in your father's lap, or your grandfather's lap, I'm sorry, especially since nobody knew about this. What happened?
Right. So this is what's interesting, and I don't know if my mother is going to, like, kill me for sharing this part of the story. So we're going to go with it. No, the story, I'm sure that it connects for many people. So this is the thing. My grandfather was a pastor. I was conceived out of wedlock. So in Jamaica, where I was born, that didn't go over too well in the community, right? So there was, to some extent, a breakup. My Genesis story starts with this breakup. You know, my mother and father didn't remain together after I was conceived. And so here it is, my great-grandmother comes to my grandfather, who is another part of the country at the time, or the island at the time, and is asking about this grandchild that, to some extent, shouldn't really be here, you know? And so, to some extent, that started the journey back, you know, this spiritual, otherworldly connection. His favorite person came and said, look, you've got to let this go. And that kind of began the journey back. And I keep going back to that part. My great-grandmother just kind of opened the door. And so after that, my grandfather became, like, one of my favorite people in the world. It was a really, really lovely experience that I had with him as long as I had him. It was a really, really beautiful time. But that connection was necessary. That healing of that breakup was necessary for that experience I had with him to even exist. Yeah.
Well, you know, there is that aspect of the risk, the very real risk in a culture that's very conservative about certain things, this one in particular, where it could have been that you didn't get to have a relationship with your grandfather and with your family. And, you know, what I understand is that while you didn't necessarily grow up with your father being present in your life, you did have a lot of strong influences from your family. Tell me more about that.
Absolutely. So the women in my family are incredibly strong, very dynamic. My grandfather raised his children to be very educated. So he was a tailor and a pastor, and he wanted them all to be highly educated. So my aunts are either nurses, pharmacists, or educators. My mom was the educator of the bunch as far as the girls are concerned. And so there was a high premium put on being smart, being intelligent, being learned. And that passed forward to me. I'm the first grandchild of the bunch. So that expectation was very high for me to be educated, be smart, be very learned as well. And so, of course, that's what I did. You know, it wasn't a matter of if you're going to college. It was where are you going to college, you know. And so a lot of energy was put into my headspace. A lot of the things that we did and discussed and rallied around and celebrated were achievement, to be very honest. Not so much around the touchy-feely things, like the warm fuzzies, like you see the Cosby Show, and you kind of get this feeling of warm fuzzy hugs and all those kind of things. There was absolute love, but the expression of love was through the mind, through the knowing. Like my mom's favorite gift to this day are books. And so I have that love of books as well. You know, like if she loves you, she's getting you something to read to reinforce your mind. And so to some extent, that was the family that I grew up with. We were all about the headspace, growing the brain, knowing more, learning more. And so that was very interesting. However, when it came to relationships, the untold lessons that I learned was that you can expect to either be betrayed or there's not very much room to be vulnerable and tender, because to some extent you're going to be disappointed or you're going to be hurt or betrayed. And that's the story that I saw with many of the women in my family. And so there was this be smart, achieve, but there's also it, when it comes to relationships with men, expect not so much, you know. So it's a very interesting dynamic between the two worlds. You know, be very smart, but the partnership, maybe not.
And, you know, I see how that what you're learning was confirmed by your experience. You touched on it a little bit about, you know, heartbreak and not necessarily having this relationship with your father, and that you're not his only child.
So I'm my father's first child. I have three other siblings, and of the four of us, I would say I was the out. I feel like I would label myself. My early story was I was the outside child because I was the one that didn't grow up with him per se. My other siblings did. So it was a very interesting story that I had in my mind of my self-value in relation to him and to my other siblings as I was growing up. I always felt there was an unknown brokenness. Like I didn't identify it as such, but it's almost like this unknown thing. Like I knew it was there, but I didn't have words for it, that I wasn't chosen. I wasn't loved. I wasn't protected. That in some way played in the background of my mind because of my non-existent relationship or very broken relationship with my biological father. And so it was a very interesting time growing up, and I can look back and see some of the relationship choices that I've made and how it's directly connected to that desire to be chosen, that desire to be desired, you know. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I'm grateful that the stories have changed, but yeah, I can see that.
So the stories have changed. You've had the benefit of retrospect and the gift of insight about where you are, that has led you to be where you are now. But what was it in the beginning? You know, this desire to be protected, to be chosen, to be embraced by a man who desires you. How specifically did that impact your early choices?
So early choices, I always wanted to have someone that would, as I said, choose me. And so I started having relationships when I was a teenager, my early teens, and well, mid-teens. And so I guess when some people at that age weren't really dating, I was already in my mind saying, well, I want to date and be married. Like I had this very definitive, I'm going to be married early because I want to be with someone who wants me back. And because of that, I was very relationship bound. Not necessarily that I needed to be in a relationship so early, because realistically at 15, 16, what did I really know about relationships? But I just knew that I wanted to be chosen. I wanted to have. It was kind of a part of my ego, a part of my identity of I have someone. And that was my earliest part, you know. And so when I look at the people that I dated earlier on, to be honest, I'm really grateful of who was brought into my life because they were all in their own way a part of my healing journey for my relationship with my father, even though I didn't know it at the time, you know. But they all were, I feel, brought into my life to show me who I was at that time and to give me an opportunity to change that story and heal from the early story that I believed that I was not worthy of being chosen.
You know, I'm taking a moment to sit with that. I think it is an issue that so many people do struggle with. And not to say that it's exclusive to gender, but we are very inundated as a culture. We are socialized to have this masculine and feminine role where it is the role of the man to choose. It is the role of the woman to make every effort to be as attractive as possible in order to attract the most attractive attention possible. And so, you know, not only, it seems that it's not only about the story that you have specifically regarding your father, but what you were experiencing in that situation was confirmed by what you learned by watching television and from the fairy tales and what society tells you is your purpose in terms of romantic relationships and views on romantic relationships and how to engage in romantic relationships. So from what I'm understanding, you're going to be dealing with an uphill battle here if you're going to come out of that mindset and heal from the disappointment and the heartbreak that set you afloat on this journey to finding yourself and becoming the person you are now. And I understand that there was a pretty profound experience that you had that became your wake-up call. Can you talk a little bit about that?
One of my many wake-up calls, yeah. So my first major breakup, I've had a couple, but my first major breakup that just, like, again, there's, I don't know if you've seen the commencement speech by Steve Jobs. There's one part where he speaks that you can't see you can't connect the dots looking forward, only looking back, right?
Interesting,
so you have these things. You have these things that happen in your life, and in the midst of it, it's like, what is this? What mess is this that I'm going through? I don't get it. And then maybe months, years, decades even later, you look back and you're like, oh, that was so divine. That was so perfect for the lesson. But in the moment, it just sucks. So this first sucky breakup was my freshman year of college, and it was first grandchild of my family, so I'm the first also to go to university here in America. So following suit of a different world, I went to a college that I thought was going to be like a different world down in Louisiana. I'm from New York. And so I went away for college. So the stress of being away for college, coupled with a couple of other things, put a lot of stress on me. And then I found out that the guy that I'd been dating since high school was cheating on me. And that was like the final straw, like that broke the camel's back. And in essence, when I found out about that, my body, like emotionally, I didn't really know what to do with it, but my body apparently tried to manage it. And how my body managed it was it became paralyzed. Half of my face became paralyzed. And so if you imagine, as a 19-year-old, I look like I had a stroke. My facial muscles, like when I smiled, only half of my face responded. When I blinked, only one of my eyes blinked. You know, when I chewed food, food would kind of dribble out of one side of my mouth because half of my face just didn't want to work. And at that time, I was, you know, working with my mentor, who's a physician. And, you know, he did the typical thing, which is the typical conventional thing, which is to give me some muscle meds and also antibiotics. Like, he gave me the typical pharmaceutical or conventional medical routes, and nothing worked. So I had to go back to college with a paralyzed face. That's, you could imagine how devastating, you know, that is, because, you know, you're in college, you want to be cute.
And we've already talked about your role, right? That what
exactly.
You're being socialized to being is your role is to be picked,
exactly.
And who's going to pick somebody who has half their face not working?
Exactly. So it was a very thing, journey, because one, I saw who, of course, my inner circle was, the people who didn't care what I looked like. They were just like, girl, come on. But it also was an interesting journey for myself. Like, how much do I love me when I'm not looking my best? So it made me also start being very aware of my value of myself, in a whole another way, outside of my head smarts. Yeah, what about my beauty smarts? What about this other stuff, these other components? And so weeks went by, and my face remained paralyzed, and, you know, did everything that I was told to do. And one day I finally sat down. My intuition just said, you have to tell this boy how really this affected you, you know, because I was trying to act like it didn't faze me, because that's what I've learned to do from, you know, the strong women. You got to be strong. A strong woman doesn't let anyone see them crack, right? And so finally I decided, you know what, I'm just going to be really vulnerable and express to this man, not in a in this destructive way. I was becoming Aaliyah. This was around, I'm writing you a 4-page letter. That's where I sat down.
Yes.
Oh, yes. I had to get my pen and paper and write a letter. And it was so interesting. I just really expressed my disappointment in who I thought he was, what I expected, this is how it affected me, and I just laid it on the line. I expected nothing of him. I just had to communicate my feelings, and the most miraculous thing happened. As I sealed the letter, closed the letter, put the stamp on it, my face reset, and the muscles
just
relaxed.
Like that.
I couldn't have done anything else, because I did everything else I could do. Just as I was finishing the letter, I expressed and I kind of just released everything into this letter. I said what I had to say. I no longer held it in my body. I had let it go. My body was like, okay, good. We've been waiting. And I was just amazed that that happened. I mean, at 19, I didn't really have a place to put that, like what just happened. I just saw the connection, like wrote the letter, said what I had to say. Face is better. Interesting. And, you know, moved on with my life. You know, honestly, I just went back to classes, got back into my chemistry classes and biology classes. Now I can look back and see, oh, okay, I see what happened. Most people aren't aware that our brain, there's 3-part components of our brain. The first one, they call it like the reptilian brain, which is more connected to like our fight or flight responses. So if you think a bear is chasing you, that part of your brain kicks in and tells your body to prepare for a fight or to run. The second layer is what they would call more the mammalian layer. That part of our brain houses both of our emotions, as well as how we store our memories, as well as it connects our feelings to emotions. And if those things are very, very, like, agitated, affects our hormones and our temperature directly. So literally the part of our brain that houses our emotions and our hormones are stored in the same place of our brain. So if your emotions are, you know, all over the place, whether you want to recognize it or not, especially from a breakup, it has this direct effect on the body. I didn't know that back then. You know, I just knew my face was better. You know,
right.
That's all I knew. Now it makes more sense, you know, so it's pretty cool.
But that is so extraordinary, and I think that the average person does not have the benefit of that experience, something so stark to demonstrate that I don't know if you'd call it a principle or a fact, you know, but the truth is that we do have this mind-body connection. You know, folks tend to want to separate the mind from the body, but from emotion, from those things. And as you're describing your upbringing, it sounds like that was a value. Right. The mind can be held pristine from the, the influences of emotion that would sully the mind in some ways. We're very much discouraged from recognizing ourselves as emotional beings. I mean, I will say that I'm happy to understand that this is changing quite a bit, so that now when folks are hiring, especially in business now, in the corporate world, there's this idea that one needs to have an intelligence quotient, right? It's called IQ.
Yeah.
But it's emotional intelligence, right? EQ, I'm sorry. It's not the IQ, EQ. It's called your emotional intelligence, your emotional intelligence quotient. The ability to recognize emotion in other people, but then also the ability to recognize emotion in oneself, and then to be able to use that emotion to understand better what is happening. Our emotions are very important indicators of things that we are understanding subconsciously, right? They are flags or sort of signposts that say, wait, stop here a moment and dig a little deeper.
So this and everything you're saying is absolutely correct, and these are some of the, I think, side effects of society being very masculine oriented for a very long time. And I always say, I love what masculine has to offer. Masculine is where you have this direct A to B. It's very strategic. It's about getting things done in the now. It's trying to find the shortest path to completion. That's the masculine. It's, about getting that stuff done. The feminine, though, gets stuff done in a very different, more dynamic way. It's more about the connections and, the feelings and being very true about what's going on in the body and connecting not only to ourselves but to other people, society, our planet. And for a very long time, we've seen those connections, that feminine aspect, as weak. So imagine, whether it be boy or girl, you're raised not to be emotional. You know, being emotional is a bad thing. Stop being a punk might be some of the terms that are thrown to a boy, or they'll just say, you're just being emotional to a girl to make her feel bad about having a feeling about something, which is the craziest thing when you think about it, because our feelings are actually what connects our mind to our body, So what I'm loving now is that this entire rise of the feminine, this rebalancing of the masculine and feminine energies, is now allowing us to say, oh, there is an absolute value of our feelings and our emotions. And if anything, it's the most true thing. It's what makes things actually move. That's what emotion means, energy and motion,
So you dropped all of this amazing knowledge, from understanding the three parts of the brain and how they function, understanding masculine and feminine energy and how those energies are in all of us, male and female, and other as well. And so I'm curious then, I'm supposing that this experience, this very profound experience you had, where it was very clearly demonstrated to you that there is this connection between what you're feeling emotionally and what you experience physically, that this set you off on a journey of discovery, of learning, understanding more, and has brought you to a place where you have this understanding. I'm curious about what you did to learn the things that you are learning now, and why, how is it that somebody out there listening can learn these things too?
Let me start by saying that what I did is something that we all intuitively do, but we've been taught to some extent that it's not valuable. We've all had these knowings, these inner knowings that you don't have a logical explanation for it, but you just feel it in your body. there's a space like right below our belly button that all kinds of feelings happen. You can get butterflies there, or it can get very tight when you feel anxious about things, or it's ooey gooey when you feel like something great is about to happen. There's this little space below our belly button that we all, women might call it our womb space, but guys have it as well. You know, it's this creative space. And to some extent, we've been taught to ignore it, you know. And so over the years, what's happened for me is that these knowings would happen. This, I would call it downloads. It's just this, I didn't make it up. It just came to me. But then what I then do, that feminine download knowing, I balance it with my masculine where I'm like, that's an interesting idea that just came to mind. I wonder. And through curiosity, I then hit, you know, either books, mentors, internet, excessive study to find out, is there something that's already out there in the known world that I can ground this intuitive knowing in? And to some extent, that interplay between that feminine masculine, that intuitive and this intelligence, you know, has been more of my journey over the past couple of decades. And so I call it, like I said, I call it a download. And I think we've all had it. You've had this immediate, I keep calling it the knowing, this universal intelligence that just gives you a glimpse of something and you capture it in your mind. And then you just say, I wonder if there's more to this. And you do some research and you find out that there is more to that, right? The cool thing is that in the scientific world, they're finding that that intuitive knowing is real. That's the coolest thing. You know, there's a lot of research going on now that's saying that one of the most common studies that they've done is where they have card players going through decks of cards, and you would do make a bet on whether or not you think the next card is going to be a favorable card or a non-favorable card. And in the beginning, the person is using their mind, and they have all, like I said, all these electrodes on their palms of their hands, monitoring their eyes, monitoring their sweat glands. And what they notice is after a few cards have been flipped and they're kind of getting this tempo that they're recognizing, their body begins to respond to what's going to happen in the cards before their mind does. So their body is more aware of what's about to happen, the next best choice, before their logical mind kicks in. And they're seeing all of that with all these electrodes. So our body knows. Our feelings are probably the most accurate thing that we have, right? But again, if we're being told to ignore it, we're kind of doing ourselves and everyone else a disservice, you know?
Well, certainly. And I'm glad you mentioned that science is becoming better equipped to be able to visualize and quantify. I mean, I spoke earlier in the show about how emotions are not necessarily quantifiable, but we're getting to a place where we're at least able to image what's happening in the body to show that it is a real thing. I mean, I remember seeing, I think it was a video that was passed around on Facebook of a feeling. And it's a feeling happening. And so, you know, there was a video that showed a nerve in the brain, and it showed a particular chemical making its way along this nerve. And of course, it's slowed down, you know, thousands of times so that you can see it happening in real time. Often when people come to me in my practice, you know, I'm a mediator, I'm an ombudsman. And when they come to me and they are feeling overwhelmed and despondent and at a loss for what to do, I help them to feel better by explaining to them that they're having a chemical experience, that their emotions are chemical manifestations of what's going on with them. Their emotions are manifestations of the chemical experience that they're having. And that can be often helpful to folks because, again, we have been so focused on the, you know, what is provable, on what is intellectual, you know, the masculine, as you say, that it is requiring seeing these things from that perspective, being able to visualize them from that perspective for folks to finally understand and agree, you know, how is it that, for example, your great-grandmother could appear to your grandfather in a dream and give him this information? There are lots of skeptics out there who are listening right now who are going, oh, folks make this stuff up all the time. It doesn't really happen. But does it not? Right?
Well, this is the interesting thing. And I respect skeptics because, you know what, I'm one of them. I'm one of those people that I'm forever questioning, and I need to know the why. I call myself the forever two-year-old. You know, if you're around a two-year-old, you tell them to describe, but why? That and what are my two favorite questions. Why is it and what is it? What, you know, those things. So I respect the skeptics. And be, you know, be thoughtful in what they're doing because you don't want to just fall for anything. With that said, I would encourage people to not be skeptical of what they are feeling. Sometimes we're skeptical and we teach people to be skeptical of what they know to be true for themselves. Like one of the things that I encourage people to do, especially when it comes to children, because children come in knowing so much. They're such beautiful teachers. They come in with this knowing that they don't have to explain it. They just know. And so if you've ever seen a child who doesn't want to hug Uncle So-So, they're just like, I'm not feeling him. I don't know. You don't see this? Something's up with Uncle So-So-and-so. I'm not feeling him. What we'll in our logical masculine mind do is say, we'll override that child and say, well, no, you won't embarrass me by not doing what I say do, which is more the masculine thing. We're going to control this. We're going to make you do it. And so now you've taught this child to disregard their internal knowing of protection, of something about you doesn't feel safe. Because I know how I feel when I'm safe. You don't feel safe. I don't want to enter your energy bubble. I don't want to touch you. I don't want to hug you. I don't want you to touch me. But instead what we do is we override that. So we teach that child to silence that. So imagine if you've been, like many people, unfortunately, sexually violated. That part of our knowingness also begins to be affected, right? We stop, become deaf to that internal knowing because to some extent it's been violated. That's the next layer of the violation. It's not only physical, it's that emotional body that's been violated. And so that way of calibrating what's safe begins to become affected. And that's what you see. That calibration opens is also a bit off, right? And then we begin to reinforce the story of, well, I must only be worth this because they keep doing this to me. Part of it is the recalibration of that emotion. But that only happens if we value that emotion exists as opposed to just the mental trying to beat it into submission. No, all of it matters.
You know, I'm glad you're bringing this up now as well. I was going to ask you about patterns and then also ask you, how do you apply all of this knowledge that you've brought forward to the world of breakups specifically? But, you know, you're talking about the calibration and recalibrating and how a traumatic experience can throw off the calibration and lead to situations where one finds oneself having the same experience over and over again. And we talked a little bit earlier about your personal experience with breakups and how you're able to look back at them and see what they were intended to teach you. But I was curious about whether you perceived certain patterns and how you used what you know to see those patterns, to understand what they were supposed to do for you, and then to actually apply that and benefit from it.
Absolutely, absolutely. So in my journey, the work that I do, I work with people who are looking to release chronic conditions of different sorts. So it might be someone who is having chronic diabetes concerns or even fertility challenges. So there's something in the physical body that's out of alignment that's stopping them from creating the life that they desire, you know, whether it be their digestive system is off or something like that. What I find oftentimes is there's this emotional component. And so as a facilitator of healing, I also recognize that I have to do my own personal work in healing myself. And so just as much as I'm of service to others, I'm constantly looking at, okay, what's the next thing that I need to address within myself? What other level of self-love and awareness do I need to address? And over the past year, what came up was I have to heal the relationship with my father. I mentioned, I didn't grow up with him at all. So that family experience was very punctuated. It wasn't this, calling, you know, the person who sired me, if you will, dad, was the furthest thing from my reality. And it just became so very clear that for the next leg of, you know, whatever my work here is to do, I had to go back and heal that. And so over the past year, I spent, you know, significant time speaking to him and to his parents to find out where he was, to really understand more of who he was. And what I found, interestingly, is a lot of the challenges that I was facing growing up around self-worth, feeling connected, feeling worthy, he experienced and may still be experiencing. And it also went far back to the grandparents' generation as well. So I'm like, oh, this is a multi-generational emotional experience. It wasn't just a me thing. You know, this was, it's flowing downhill. And we often say, you know, in certain spiritual circles, what happens with the father, the curses of the father is visited on the children. We're seeing that that's an emotional story as well. What we don't fix, we pass on, whether through active experiences or through genetic experiences. We pass those things on. And so for me, my work has been through all kinds of therapy, through the use of flower essences, which has been life-altering. Are you familiar with flower essences?
I'm not. Please tell me. And I'm sure that folks who are listening, there are a lot of people out there who haven't heard of this either.
Okay, so flower essences. We can all agree that when we see flowers, take a moment to appreciate flowers, we just feel better. Whether it be the smelling of the flower, the seeing of the flower, it makes us feel better. Well, there was a doctor called Dr. Bach, who started off as a regular MD. And he found that with his patients, when they would come to him, he would try his best to fix whatever their condition was. But even though they got better, it would kind of come back up a few months later or a few years later. And he's like, what's going on? Like, what's the problem here? So he started doing more investigation. He became that two-year-old. And in his being a two-year-old, he started paying attention to the emotional patterns of the patients that were coming to him. And he started noticing that people that presented with certain physical conditions also had an emotional component. They had this pattern of emotional experiences over and over again. So some people might always be coming in with respiratory issues, but they also had this emotional grief that always followed them, right? Or someone who's coming in with hormonal issues also seems to be coming in with a lot of possible anger challenges, whether they recognized it or not. There was this element of anger. Some of the people that came in with kidney challenges also came in with emotional components of fear. And so he started paying attention to that. He said, this is interesting. And so he had what I would call a download, that knowingness, that thing that didn't exist before, but he then captured somewhere in the ether and downloaded. And he started testing the usage of water that settled on different flowers. And the science behind that is water is a universal solvent. That's why water is so important for us to drink. It's able to dissolve more things than any other liquid, but it's also able to hold vibrations. And this is stuff that Stanford University and MIT, they're doing all kinds of fun research with it now, where our water holds actual vibrational information. So the download he got was, if I capture the water that's settled on these different flowers and give it to my patient, perhaps this might do something emotionally for them. And what he started finding is, depending on their emotional condition, when he gave them this, what we call flower essence, which is water with a vibration embedded in it from different flowers, they released that emotional burden that they just couldn't get rid of much easier. And then the physical element that they were experiencing also started to release. And so flower essences came about. There are a number of companies that have flower essences now, and there's a very specific way to use them. But I found that that was very transformative because, like I said, I did my own counseling and coaching and those different things, and that's very powerful. But there were some things that I just didn't even know I was dealing with emotionally, stuff that might have not even been mine to deal with. It might have been coming through epigenetically through my father's line or my mother's line. And so the flower essences was huge in helping me release some of that. Other phytotherapy, such as aromatherapy, essential oils, was powerful as well, because that second brain that I mentioned, that mammalian part of our brain, it's the kind of like the middle part of our brain, is directly connected to our sense of smell. So just like if you smell a particular food, it immediately transports you back to a memory, right? And it's as vivid in your mind as ever. That limbic part of our brain is what allows us to also access memories that might not serve us and to dissolve them. And aromatherapy is another powerful tool to do that. And so for me, I find that I've journeyed through my own self-healing, and I'm still journeying through. I find as many different tools, I call them different tools, to help me in that journey. So it's not just a matter of my self-will, because that can get pretty tiring if you're trying to override it with only your will. It can be very tiring, and it feels kind of defeating if you can't will yourself to feel better, no matter how much you try, you know, or will yourself to get over it, no matter how much you try. I find it very helpful to use different tools to assist in that process of releasing what no longer is serving.
So you're going to laugh perhaps and then perhaps say, yes, I know, of course. But as you started describing the flower essences and so forth, and you mentioned Bach, right? You said Dr. Bach. And immediately I reached over, I have a little table here to my left, and I picked up my own box of Bach Rescue Remedy.
So yes!
I actually do know about flower essences. I just didn't know that I knew.
Yes, there it is.
And so just before the show, I took a few drops of the rescue
yes.
remedy.
Yes. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. Because I did too.
See, same wavelength. It works.
Yes. Yes.
It works.
Yes.
This is
yes.
too funny.
And that's what I'm saying.
So this entire time
as
you've been describing this, I've been sitting here thinking, oh, she's not going to believe this.
But I do. But I do. It makes perfect sense. It makes perfect sense. And this is what I'm saying. I'm loving the bridging of the spiritual world and the scientific world. The bridging really came alive for me when I spent a year in Korea. Through a number of different moves, I had asked, you know, God, I was like, God, if you allow me to do what I love, which is the core of what I love is education. I love teaching. I love empowering through knowledge. I said, if you allow me to teach what I love, which is science, chemistry, biology, physics, if you allow me to teach that in another country, I'll go. And within a couple of weeks, an opportunity came up to teach. Oh, and I put another condition on that. I said, if you allow me to teach in a spiritual environment, I'll go. Well, you know, universe is always listening. Universal intelligence
yep.
is always listening. Within 2 weeks, an opportunity came up for me to chemistry, biology in a Christian school in South Korea.
Wow.
I said, oh, for real though? Okay then. So I was like,
down the line,
I
check,
would.
Check, check.
It gives everything I asked for, which again goes back to be very clear about what you want, but also, you know, be in alignment, you know, ask for what's been the highest good for you, you know, and that's what I put out there. And so while I was there, my actual job was to take the Bible text and the science text, biology and chemistry manuals, and see how they overlap and then teach the students. What? This is what I get to do? Mm-hmm. Cool. And the things that I found, I was like, whoa, in all the years of being raised by a grandfather who was a pastor, I had not seen these things. And all the years that I'd been a science buff, you know, chemistry, biology major, chemistry minor, I had not seen these things, these connections. And I was like, what? So we've been hearing it in different circles all of our life, this understanding of energy, this understanding of what we're really made of, what it takes to be well. We've been hearing it, but we've not really understood it, right?
Right.
And so, for example, one of the simplest downloads was this idea of, in the spiritual realms, we hear about spirit and the energy of spirit. In the science realms, we're talking about this quantum world.
Yes.
But when you look at the essence of both of these things, if you strip the terms away and just look at the essence of what they're describing, they're talking about the same thing, this thing that is and forever will be, that allows everything to be connected. They're saying the same thing. Unfortunately, we get caught up in, you know, the term that we're using, but it's the same. And so understanding that, being aware of the power of gratitude, like going back into the spiritual text, it's like, well, for all things be grateful. It's kind of difficult when things suck, you know, and that's where you got to be real is when things suck. But when the actual being full of gratitude is an actual vibration, like these are measurable things now. One of the tools that I use is a high-tech machine that allows us to actually measure what your emotional state is. And some people are just like, wait, you can see that? Yeah, you can see that. Everything is a frequency. And so the frequency of gratitude is a very healing frequency. If you're full of gratitude, you find that certain illnesses just cannot exist when a person is truly grateful. I don't mean fronting like they're happy. That's a very different vibration. I understood that vibration. I used to do that for years. I'd smile, but on the inside, I'm just like, if you only knew what was happening, you know.
Right.
That's not the gratitude we're talking about. It's the something good or not so, in my mind, good. And I don't, that's the easiest binary way of explaining it. But something that I don't favor is happening, but I know that something is good is going to come up with this. So let me just be in this moment, find something to be grateful for. You know, I just had a car crash, but I'm alive. Let me be grateful as opposed to flipping out on the person who crashed into me, right?
Right.
Or, you know, in those little moments, this person dumped me and it hurts. But in this moment, let me be grateful that there's something that I might have been spared in the long run, you know, or what is this person teaching me and releasing me? You know,
You're getting into what I wanted to ask you to focus on next, because we are, believe it or not, coming down to the last few minutes of the show. We have about 5 or 6 minutes left. Can you believe it? but I wanted you to please focus on application. You know, if a person is contemplating a breakup or going through a breakup, or perhaps is trying to navigate the aftermath of a breakup and is having a hard time doing it, how can they apply what you are talking about in a way that can be helpful to them, that can help them to release the negative, you know, the toxic aspects of that relationship and to benefit from what does serve them?
Okay, I'm going to start from the most dense and work my way up to subtle. So in the dense physical reality, something that we all do every day is eat, right? And so how can we use food to actually help us with a breakup? And in this regard, I'm not talking about the pint of Rocky Road, although that is yummalicious. that is not necessarily going to help with the actual physical emotions. And because emotions are actual chemicals, our body has to process the chemicals of these different emotions. And so one of the things that we can do, which is very counterintuitive, is eating specific foods to help our body process the chemical emotion faster. And some of those foods are what we would call cruciferous foods, things like broccoli, steamed kale, and I'm specific around steamed because not everyone's thyroid does well with raw kale. So steamed kale would be really powerful to help break up, because, again, when we break up, we are having an emotional response, but those emotions are all linked to actual chemical changes in our body. And if our body's not able to detox those chemical messengers fast enough, it plunges us into that feeling even deeper, because it's just like kind of backing up and building up and building up and building up. And it can feel very overwhelming. So one of the simple things would be some of the foods that we choose to eat. Eating cruciferous, I would just say, you know, you can Google cruciferous foods, but some of the more common ones are Brussels sprouts, and there are yummy ways to make them. So
yes.
Trust me, it doesn't have to be boiled. Please don't boil them.
It be roasted? Because I can do it when it's roasted.
Yes, roasted with salt and pepper with a little coconut oil. Yum, 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 yum.
Okay.
Yeah, but eating those kind of foods will really be powerful in physically helping the body to detox. Also, physical movement, especially movement that moves the lower part of the body, powerful. So whether it be belly dancing, African dance, getting a hula hoop, something to physically move that lower part of the body is powerful to help get these physical chemical messengers out of the body faster. And, of course, using the bathroom. And I know this is like, what? How did we get there from here? Again, if the chemical messengers are not able to exit the body and be metabolized well, the body reabsorbs them and recirculates them, which means that we're experiencing it more intensely than we have to if we, you know, are actually eliminating them. So make sure you're going to the bathroom at least one time a day. So if you're not, you know, eliminating, it's reabsorbing. So for some people, it might be adding more fiber to their diet. It might be drinking more water. And I do mean water, not juice that's called water, you know, because they have the waters on the market now that have color and flavor, but they still call it water. I'm like, that's called Kool-Aid. That's not water. Don't be played by the label. It is not water. So, you know, those are some of the more physical things that can be done. Moving up into more subtle ways of addressing it is, one, really plunging into a self-care practice. And when I say self-care, it could be about really romancing yourself, because the other part of the breakup is if we were getting some type of romantic experience with this person, not having that and then having the chemical responses that this person provided for us kind of puts us into a state of withdrawal. Like the serotonin that we experienced when we saw that person or we experienced that person, that was gone because that the pleasure that they brought about is no longer there. So the question is, how can you provide that pleasure for yourself? You know, for me, some of the things that, go ahead.
Well, I'm so sorry to have to jump in on this because we literally are coming down to the last minute and a half of the show. Obviously, I have to have you back because you're now starting to get into some really wonderful, juicy sides. So could we do a part two?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's fabulous. But before we finish for this episode, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
The easiest way would be to just send me some love via email, just say, Janelle, I would love to speak with you about some things. I think I would want to do some work with you. And that would be in my email box. That's janiele@legaciesofhealth.com.
Wonderful. So, Janelle, J-A-N-I-E-L-E. Oh, goodness, I got that. At legaciesofhealth.com. That's wonderful,
yes.
Janelle. So listen, you're going to come back on the show. We're going to continue this conversation. I want to thank you so, so very much for coming on and whetting our appetites for this information. You're doing precisely what I'm hoping this show will do for folks who are contemplating transitioning out of relationships. So I hope that you've had an opportunity to hear Janelle's story, to gather information from it, and that you will tune in again next week for a show about moving on, using a real estate agent to move on from your relationships physically as well as emotionally. Have a wonderful week, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.